Okay, so for this evening's little talk, as you can hear today, I have a sexy voice. Maybe. A little bit of a cold. So I was going to talk about how to deal with little things like sicknesses. One of the powerful stories in my monk life was when I was staying with one of the most energetic, severe, tough monks in the Northeast Forest tradition. And his name was Ajahn Mahabua. And he was so tough that once, one night when he did have a heart attack, real big one, and the doctor came the following morning, so Chinese traditional doctor, and felt all the pulses. I think it's 7 pulses or 9 pulses or something. And he said, "They're all gone. You're supposed to be dead. What are you doing with your eyes open talking to me?" And I can understand how a monk like that could do that, because he was just so tough. And it brought me back to understand the nature of the human body. Last week in the sutta class, one, I think it was a bit earlier than that, I was mentioning the 4 things which keep your body going. It's not just food, it's also will, it's also experience, good experience, and also being conscious. Called the 4 nutriments for the sustaining of this human body. It's not just food. Sometimes in our modern world we sort of focus a bit too much on the food, but it's also on the experience as well. Have you ever noticed it's the way that you, even if you are sick, you go out into the world even. Obviously don't want to spread any germs, but when you have a positive attitude rather than withdrawing into yourself, in other words, going out and having a little bit more fun, games, enjoyment, that is always going to be a great therapy for people. It's the laughter is the best medicine. Why do they say that? It's because it starts you engaging with the positive side of life. So I'm not quite sure about you, but I asked many times before, what type of blood type are you? And what is the best blood type? It is, of course, B positive. And if you haven't got B positive, just go and change your blood type. I don't know if you can do that or not, but nevertheless, that positive attitude to even like sickness, it means that it doesn't affect you so much as what the Buddha was saying, the experience and how you relate to it. So later on, this tough monk, Ajahn Mahabua, he told me personally this anecdote that once when he had malaria fever, and this is what monks would have in those days in Thailand. They'd always be having malaria simply because they're in the forest, in the jungle, there was no medication, and it was just a matter of time before you catch the malaria fever. I was fortunate, never got malaria fever, but many times was in places where people did. But anyway, he was in the middle of a big fever, sweating, shaking, feeling terrible. And it was a time for the chores in the monastery, which in those days was mostly sweeping the paths. The reason why he had to sweep the paths every day, because if you didn't sweep the paths, you don't know what was underneath the leaves. Centipedes, and those centipedes in Thailand, they really hurt. People used to say even more than snakes. And it's also the snakes as well. It's a very dangerous place to walk if you couldn't see what was under the leaves. So during the daytime, we'd always sweep to make sure that the paths in the jungle were clear. And he was, he had a fever, but he said, no, I'm going to get up and I'm going to do my part. It's called the forest monk work ethic. Do they have that work ethic in Australia? maybe not, but anyway, he got up and put his robes on properly, and he went out, took a broom and started sweeping. Even though he was shaking, sweating with the fever, he had such a powerful mind, he was going to do that. And after a few minutes of using incredible willpower, that was when his teacher, this monk called Ajahn Mun, scolded him. He said, that is not the practice of Buddhism. We don't try and beat down and overpower our sicknesses. We investigate them, explore them, understand how they work. So go back up to your room, lay down, and do what I recently found out was called not meditation, but meditation. That was courtesy of Ajahn Garfield, the cat. He said he couldn't do meditation, but meditation, he would go into bed for an hour and a half and he'd wake up relaxed and peaceful, having had a nap, meditation. But go in then and just investigate, understand what sickness actually is, what a fever is, what a cold is, even what pain is. Because there are times each one of us will have to get some type of sickness. We want to understand how it works and how we can deal with these different parts of our life. And of course, recently, I mentioned this because even yesterday, we had the Solaris Care, a cancer group who came over to Bodhinyana Monastery, which I usually give them a talk, and that was from Cottesloe and Bunbury and Busselton, from many places, coming together and saying that even if it's a cancer, explore it, understand it, get to know it first. Because if you know these things, you understand them, then you can actually have almost power over them. Fear, I've got this disease, it's going to kill me, I'm coughing, this must be throat cancer, I'm going to die tonight, I'm going to choke in my own snot. And of course, that doesn't happen. So, instead we explore and understand it. What actually is it? And one of the things you do find is fear. It makes so much of our symptoms worse. And there's a book I read years ago. Remember Edgar Allan Poe? He was really a twisted mind, but very good fun. He was really weird. And one of his little short stories was called The Mask of the Red Death. Like a mask, like a ball, like a dance in the old days. And that just afterwards, or just before, I forget which, they had the idea that all these plagues and diseases which they had in former times were all caused by like bad spirits. And it was a wonderful way of just envisaging these bad spirits were having like a conference together. You know, just checking out each other's progress and what they were up to. And these bad spirits, they were asked, how many people did you kill in Paris? I killed 100 people in Paris. How many did you kill in Frankfurt? Oh, I killed 150. How many killed? They didn't go as far as Singapore because they couldn't afford the airfare. And how many did you kill over in London? And the one in London said, I killed 1,000. What do you mean? Well, actually, I only killed about 100, and fear killed the other 900. And I always remember that great insight, how one of the biggest killers in human beings is fear, the overreaction, because we don't understand sickness. We exaggerate and sometimes, sometimes we can become a bit hypochondriac. Of course, there is sometimes we do need to pay proper attention, but it reminded me of the story of this hypochondriac who would always be visiting this doctor. Every time there was a disease in the newspaper, he would go to the doctor and say, oh, I think I've got Ebola. He said, you've never been to Africa, you haven't got Ebola. Oh, okay, thank you. And then you read about dengue fever. I think I've got dengue fever. He said, no, you've never been outside of Perth. Oh, thank you very much. Every new disease, he thought he had it. And one day, this doctor was just so upset at him. He said, just telling him, just being kind, it wasn't working. Just coming back next day with another disease. So he decided to be firm. When his fellow came in and said he had this latest disease, the doctor looked at him and said, you have not got that disease. You're just a hypochondriac. You are just exaggerating. You're just living through fear. I don't want to ever see you in my surgery again. You're in perfect health. Get out now. It was really fierce. If I had a much better throat, I could do that much better, but give me a break. So get out now. And this poor patient was just so shocked. He was staggered out of the surgery, so stunned by the doctor's attitude, he didn't realize that he walked right across the road and got hit by a truck and killed. And the doctor ran out, said, oh my goodness, what have I done? I was too tough on him. And at that, the doctor had a heart attack and died as well. So because two of them died almost the same time, they got buried in graves next to one another. And of course, the first night in the coffin underground, the doctor heard someone knocking on his coffin. And of course, when he opened it up, who was outside but the hypochondriac? What are you doing here? Oh, doctor, doctor, have you got anything for worms? Ho, ho, ho. For worms, worms in the ground, okay. Anyway. But, so sometimes to get the right balance, so it's actually you know how to look after yourselves and have a bit of happiness and joy, even when you are sick. Number one, as I often say, what's wrong with being sick? I've mentioned this before. I told this yesterday afternoon to the Solaris people. What's wrong being sick? Is it against the law? Is it against regulations? Being sick supports our health system. It gives jobs to doctors and nurses. Where would these hospitals be if we weren't sick? The ambulance drivers would be probably driving Uber cars instead. But is there anybody in this room who's never been sick in their life? Please be honest. Put your hand up if you've never been sick in your life. Kids under 10 don't count because maybe they'd be pretty good. Anyone not been sick? Can I assume that every one of you has been ill from time, at least once anyway? Now imagine that someone did put their hand up. They'd never ever been sick, ever. That would be weird. That would be so strange that straight away they take you to some medical laboratory and do tests on you. What is special about this person that they've never been sick? It would be very weird. It would be extraordinary. It would be very wrong that you've never been sick. And I love that little argument because there's nothing wrong with being sick. In fact, it's okay to be sick. In fact, it is normal to be sick. So, what do you say when you go and see your doctor? You say to the doctor, "Doctor, there's something right with me. I'm sick again." Now, I told that story many times, but remember what this is pointing out to. Around sickness, we have this sense of guilt. That somehow or other, we shouldn't be sick. Especially a monk like Ajahn Brahm, who meditates, a holy person. Can holy people get sick? Am I allowed? You know that years, and years, when I used to go teaching in prisons, I had a wonderful time teaching in prisons. I learned so much teaching in prisons. I really encourage anyone to volunteer teaching in prisons. And I think I said last week or 2 weeks ago, if you do teach in a prison, please keep a record of how many hours you spend inside jail doing voluntary service, because you can use that as credit against any sentence you might get in the future. But anyway, that when I was sick some years ago, 27 years ago, and I went over to the doctors, and sitting there, you know, you're sitting in a surgery waiting for your appointment and you feel really terrible. And I was in the surgery waiting for my appointment, and one of the prison officers came in. I knew him from Carnot Prison Farm. And he took one look at me and he said, "I never expected to see you in here." I felt like I was in a brothel or in a pub or something. As if I was in the wrong place. I felt so ashamed. A monk, a teacher is sick. "I'm sorry, I won't do it again, I promise." But number one, take away the negativity about being sick. And number two, enjoy it. It's wonderful when you're sick because people give you special attention. They're not so demanding of you. They just, "Oh, what can I get you to eat tomorrow morning, Ajahn Brahm? What can I get you for lunch? We want to make sure you get well soon. Sometimes I get so much special consideration when I'm sick, I don't want to get better. I'm going to milk it for everything it's worth." But explore it. When you have fun with whatever you have to experience, it brings back that really important Buddhist teaching. It's not the physical feelings. It's not what you have to deal with. It's what between you and what you're experiencing in life. Life is a series of relationships. You just had a death in the family. How do you relate to that? What's between you and that feeling? You just lost your job. How are you relating to that? it doesn't mean that losing a job is bad. It can be wonderful if you lose a job, because if you lose a job at work, it means you can be free to volunteer for the Buddhist Society of West Australia. And make lots of good karma. And people say, oh, but it's not like that. The love of my life, I've lost. I'm heartbroken. He's left me. Wonderful, you're so lucky. Now you are free. You don't have to wear makeup and uncomfortable clothes and just, you know, be nice to him. You're free, you can do whatever you want. So, it's not what happens to you in your life, it's how you relate to that. Look, one of the old stories is, and I think it can fit in here. A long time ago, there's these two Thai sisters. They still come every now and again. I'm just checking they're not here, otherwise I get into trouble. These two Thai sisters, they came to see me. They were young. One was married, the other one was single. Maybe about in their mid-20s or something. And the one which was married was complaining about her husband. Oh, he was like this, he was always demanding, just always, you know, saying she's wrong or whatever, and always niggling. And she wanted some counselling about, you know, just to try and have a better relationship with her husband. And that was where I told him something like that story of the father-in-law who took his new son-in-law aside. Said, son, I want to give you some advice because you just got married to my daughter. You probably think she's absolutely perfect and wonderful. I said, yeah, she's amazing. She's just so beautiful and charming. She's just so skilled in everything she does. I really admire her. She's an amazing woman. I'm just so lucky to have married someone like that. It's amazing. And the father rolled his eyes and says, yes. That's what it's like when you first fall in love. But, remember this, son-in-law, in a 2 or 3 years' time, you will start to notice the faults and defects in my daughter. Now you can't see them, you're in love. But in a couple of years, you start to notice she's not as perfect as you expected. But when you start to see her faults and defects, please keep this in mind. If she didn't have those to begin with, she'd have married someone much better than you. We all have our faults and defects. So she was seeing all the faults and defects in her husband. She couldn't see them in herself. When I told her, well, he's got those faults and defects, that's why he married you. She didn't like that. But anyway, I gave her some advice and stuff. But then afterwards, then, you know, I just, her sister, you know, what's your problem? She said, well, look, it's amazing that, you know, that I go out with a boy. It's really easy, now I'm attractive and I know how to sort of date boys. But it only lasts a couple of months. Maybe 3 months, and then it all falls apart. I start again. I can never find the person for me. I really, really want a husband to share my life with, but I just can't find him. 2 or 3 months, and it just all goes haywire. I said, oh, really? You know, you want to find a husband? I said, yes, yes, I do. Please help me. I said, well, look, the solution's pretty obvious. Your sister, she's got a husband she doesn't want, and you're looking for one. Isn't that what sisters do? They share, you know, share a dress or share a shoe, share a husband. You know, I still to this day I don't know why they never understood the great wisdom of that solution. But So, going back to the reason I'm saying this story, I got serious and I told the woman who was married, said, you've got what we call husband suffering. Husband dukkha. They have a word for it, dukkha. You've got husband dukkha. If you get rid of your husband, you won't have husband dukkha anymore. You'll have what your sister has. Single woman suffering. I said, well, what else can we do? Well, suppose you become nuns. You've got lots of nuns now at Dhammasara. So if you can become a nun, you won't have husband suffering, you won't have single woman suffering, you will have nuns suffering. If you become rich, if you win the lotto tomorrow, is it tomorrow? It's Saturday, isn't it? I don't know. If I give you the winning lottery numbers, would you like them? Will that end your suffering? Of course it won't. People say, nodding, come on. You won't have poor person suffering. You will have rich person suffering. And they do have suffering, you know, rich people. You know, a few times, in my job, it's amazing just how many doors are open to you. Because you're a monk, a senior monk, you amazing who you get to see. And there's this one some time ago here in Perth. She wanted a blessing for her house. It was in one of the really posh suburbs on the river. When I went into her mansion, it was a really big mansion. It had something like about 12 or 13 bedrooms. And as soon as I sat down to actually start the blessing, I just come all the way from Serpentine. And I said, I really need to go to the toilet, which is away. This is no exaggeration. She tried to explain it, but it was too complicated, so she drew me a map of how to get to the toilet. That was many years ago. Now mansions, they all come with their own GPS. But afterwards, after the meal, just chatting, I said, how many people live here with you? And she said, nobody, just me. That's what she said. And that just, whoa, that sort of, you know, really hurt me. Why? I said, my family, I can't trust them. They'll ask for a loan. They'll ask for some money. My friends, they might ask me for something too. Monks, I'm a bit concerned about you too, Ajahn Brahm. Ask me for a donation for this or that. Because of her fear that she was alone in this huge mansion by herself. Because she was afraid that people would take something from her. She had rich person suffering. So, I'm sick today. I have got a cold. So I have today sick monk suffering. It's really cool. And probably tomorrow or the next day, I'll be happy again, healthy again. What happens when you're healthy? You have healthy monk suffering. It means I can't get away after the talk saying, oh, you know, you better not keep coming asking me questions after this talk, I've got to go back. I can get away with that tonight, but not, not tomorrow. But is it really suffering? When you sort of, you're sick, you're rich, you're poor, or is it you don't know how to make use of what you have? So I'm got a bit of a cold, a cough. It's wonderful. Because what my mother told me years ago, it's not the cough that carries you off, it's the coffin they carry you off in. Haven't you heard that before? I thought that was a really neat one a long time ago. That's only a cough, that's all. So, only a sneeze. And anyway, every time I cough, it's really good exercise. Very rarely I can't cough. It's neat. So I think it's very healthy for you. Get rid of a lot of toxins as all this stuff comes out. So if you look at it in a positive way, you always find the cold, the cough doesn't last that long. Which brings me up to the next really nice story. It's about, you know, the doctor who was here. I'm just checking he's not here tonight, that's good. I often say this one about, he was a fellow who was about to resign because he lost his first patient. And it was tragedy. And he had to tell this young woman's husband, and the husband had two young kids. Couldn't tell them because they were too young to understand. But to tell the husband that his wife was no more, and his two young children had no father. He felt so guilty for that. Of course, he was not at fault. No one could have stopped that. It was just life. It happens sometimes. It's very tragic, but... And he said, I have to resign. I can't face that anymore. Imagine, you're the one who has to go and tell them. You know what happened? So I told him, of course, you've misunderstood what this health business is all about. It's not to cure anybody. That is missing out on these wonderful experiences. It's to care for people. It's just changing one letter in that word from a U to an A. To care. And he said, if you want to cure people, you will fail many, many times. I wanted to cure them. Puts pressure on them, puts pressure on you. You have to find out what's wrong with them at all costs, really find the antidote, find out how, you know, what the medicine is to cure Ajahn Brahm's cough or cold, and look, please don't do this. And last times, I even just one cough was all I did during meditation some years ago. And afterwards, I saw a few people leave after the meditation. They came back afterwards and had all these bottles of medicine right on here. They came up and said, Ajahn Brahm, this medicine is really good. You know, it cured me of everything. You know, it's homeopathic. Oh no, this is even better. This is Ayurvedic. This cured my grandma when she was in her coffin. I'm not exaggerating. This is great. This is herbal. This is indigenous medicine. This is, and oh my goodness, had all these different medicines. And you know what? And they said, oh, this is really good for you. It's really good for you. You will take some, won't you? Because they went to such a lot of trouble getting it for me. I said, oh yeah, okay. And I'm a monk, I have to keep my precepts. If I promise, I have to keep my promises. So I had to eat some of all these medicines. And then I was really sick. So don't do that to me, please. So anyway, you get a relationship between the different seasons of your life. When you're healthy and energy, when you're a bit down, low energy, and you're sick. But that doesn't stop you understanding the interaction, the relationship your mind has to your body. One of the sayings of the Buddha, which I remember now, even though your body is sick, your mind does not need to be sick. That was a powerful one. Your body is sick, your mind does not need to be sick. In other words, you can actually have a relationship to enjoy. And I'm not saying this lightly. To understand, to really get into understanding the sickness. The mind is in here having a wonderful time. Sickness is out there hurting you, but I've had so many great experiences with sickness. The time of my toothache story. I'm just going to blow my nose first. This is learning patience while I blow my nose, okay? Ah, that was good. That was a good one. Do you want to have one? Keep up. He's a very good disciple. Always follows his teaching in nose blowing. You know, I once became very close to enlightenment. I blew it. Okay, can I get out of this? But the relationship, well, this, my toothache, is the first year in the forests of northeast Thailand. And I've got a toothache. Real big one. And it's no doctors. You know, in Kui, in the jungles, no telephone. And no, it really hurt. And you know, getting worse and worse. So what did I do? I'm a good monk, meditate. Sat down, meditate. I can't stand this any longer. It was really hurting. There was no painkiller, no Panadol. We didn't have medicines. Well, what should I do next? There's a type of meditation, instead of sitting down, it's too painful. You had to move. So I decided to do walking meditation. You may have seen people doing a walking meditation. But I tried it. I was doing running meditation. Because, you know, if you've got really intense pain, you're desperate. So I thought, chanting. I know all these magical chants to overcome pain. So I was doing my chanting, and then I had to stop that to... I was shouting so loud. I was in agony. But actually, some of the chanting actually works. It's weird. Because there was, this is on a tangent, but it's interesting with health. There was a Singapore monk in this monastery over in Thailand. And another monk was in the library just reading a book. And this monk came in and said, "Where is the book on snakes?" So he got out and said, "It's a book on snakes." And he was looking through the book and said, "Oh my goodness, that's the one which just bit me. And it's fatal." Ah! And the monk had been bitten by a snake, a venomous snake in Thailand. So the other monk said, "Why didn't you tell me?" So this monk, the second monk, he ran as fast as he could to the village. Not to get the doctor, but to get the, you might probably call him witch doctor, because he had this magical chant. And he came as fast as he could, I think, in a motorbike, into the monastery. And there was this Singapore, you could see the two puncture marks, the wound was swelling, see it's all red. And he chewed this special stuff in his mouth and did this chant all over the room, doing a chant. And this Singapore young monk looked at the other monks and asked, "Can I have a proper doctor, please?" If it's somebody else, oh, this is interesting. I wonder if this is going to work. But if that's your leg and you've just been bitten by a venomous snake, you know, you want an ambulance or something, you know, scientific. But it actually worked. And with all the monks watching around, the wound, the redness subsided, the swelling went down, and the wound closed. It's weird. There is some magic around. We don't usually say very much about it. But don't expect that from me if you get bitten by a snake. Because I've got a cold, you probably get really infected. But it's interesting. But anyway, I was trying to... That's a true story. Amazing, some of the things you see in those ancient cultures. But anyway, that there was a poor monk with a wound. Well, no, me with a bad toothache. Trying chanting, shouting the loudest, because I was totally out of control. Going crazy. And there are some times in your life, if you really get, I mean, big sick, this is only small stuff, really in great pain, where you just, you can't stand it any longer. You can't go forward, you can't go back, you can't stand still. That's how Ajahn Chah would say it. All of your escape, all of your escape routes, all of your strategies don't work. Everything you've ever been taught, known, doesn't work at all. You can't stand it a moment longer. But, you know, I'd always heard of let go. How many times have you heard that word? Let go. How many times have you done let go? Very few. But that was one time I didn't have a choice. I had to let go. And it was just one of the most amazing experiences my first year as a monk. You just said let go, you had to, and you did. This is no exaggeration, this is branded in my memory. I'll never forget this. One moment I was in total agony, and the next minute I was blissed. So happy. Weird. One pain you can't tolerate, and within a tiny second, you're just really happy. You let go. That's where I had some understanding of what the Buddha meant by, even though the body is sick, the mind doesn't need to be sick. Weird. So, I just meditated for a while, just enjoying my peace and happiness. I laid down, went to sleep for an hour or two, and I woke up in the morning, had a toothache. Still there, wasn't that bad. It's amazing what your mind can do, but having that understanding, that ability to explore the nature of your body and the nature of sickness and pain, it's amazing what this body can actually do. Fear, that kills more people than anything else. It is going to hurt, it's going to hurt, and of course it does. You psyched yourself up. It's going to kill me. You go in the internet. Oh, you know, I once looked, because I had some of the people who come, it's one of the very bad diseases. More and more people are getting this these days, and that's anorexia. And I never really understood what it was, so I decided to look up in the dictionary what anorexia meant. And I realized that's my problem. Have a look next time you go in the dictionary. Anorexia means you look in the mirror and you think you're fat. That's me. Oh, come on. I'm a bit of fun, guys. Anyway, that when you have a bit of fat like that, you find sickness is bleh. You're not afraid of them. You can even learn a lot from them, explore them, understand how your body works. It will pass anyway. This too will pass. Always remember that. And that's why, even today, much worse at lunchtime, and a couple of people had come all the way from Malaysia, and they came and saw me, and they said, Ajahn Bob, you're sick. I said, yeah, I'm dying. No, you can't. Well, it may take a few more years, but you know, I'm not lying. I am dying. And I said, that's what Ajahn Chah said. When he came and visited me when I had this very bad typhus fever, he came in and said to me, Ajahn Bob, you will either get better or you'll die. And then he left. Thank you so much. Do not try that on your mum if you go and see her in the hospital this evening. Mum, I just learned. Oh yes, darling, I feel very bad. That was so wonderful of you to come and visit me in hospital. Spending this time, mum, you either can get better or you're going to die. Bye-bye. But anyway, you can do that to anyone here, I hope. The sickness doesn't last, you learn a lot from it. And it's also, it's the reason I would make sure I gave a talk this evening. Whereas to say, I give a talk, you still have fun. You can still give meaning to whatever you experience in life, because for me, whatever I have to experience in life is always a relationship. How I look at it, what I put between me and that experience. Yeah, I'm sick, I cough. You have to keep blowing your nose. Thank you. But is that going to stop us having a nice, happy evening and a meaningful evening where we can understand things like Dhamma, teachings, truth, not just written in books, but understand you can't always cure yourself. But my goodness, you can care. It's wonderful caring between all the people here and the fellow monks. All this wonderful curing. Yeah, we might probably get better by tomorrow morning, but then again, we get sick again later on. Any cure is only temporary, but it's worth it. So the next time you're sick, wonderful. Enjoy your sickness. Have fun. Be a sicko. That's 50 minutes I've been entertaining you. Hope you got something out of this. So, sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Very good. Okay, we've got any questions from overseas? See what trouble I've got into now. Yes. Okay. Oops. Question from Germany. What do you do when your body is in pain? How do you put a space between your feeling and you? Do you have to be ready to die in order to be positive and relaxed? That's a good idea. So, in other words, after a while, you find the way we react to pain. I don't want it. How long is this going to last? Then I can't take it any longer. That's when you lost the present moment and you've gone into the future. In this moment, you're enduring it, you're bearing with it. Come into this moment. Let it be. Let go of trying to control it. Because that controlling it, that makes it worse. With my little cough when I was meditating, I really wanted to sort of, but I just let it be. Relax it. Don't try and control it. Just loosen up that tightness which you have with your body. When you try and let it go, loosen it, let it be, expand it, you find it relaxes. The usual reaction is to tense up around it, to try and control it. I'm not going to cough. It's going to disturb people and disturb everybody. But no, you let it go, and then it settles down. So if your body is in pain, see if you can imagine wherever that pain is in your body, put a box around it, and then imagine the box expanding. And expanding, and expanding, and expanding. It gets far bigger than you. The pain expanding to the whole room, this whole hall, expanding to this whole city, expanding until it expands out of the solar system into the universe. Because as you're expanding the pain, you're actually diluting it. If you compress it, it gets harder and denser. Because that's what we usually want to do when trying to constrict. I'm hurting. Expand it. You find that that's one way of letting go. You may have to be ready to die in order to be positive and relaxed. Ready to die is in the future. You know, you only die when you die. You know, sometimes, are you ready to die? No one is, because you always die at the most inconvenient times. That's why I usually say that we're having our rains retreat soon. In 3 months, we're trying to be nice and peaceful and quiet, staying in our monastery. And any of you who go there for the rains retreat opening ceremony, I always say the same thing. Please, Don't be selfish. Don't think of yourself and die during our retreat period. It's so inconvenient for the monks and nuns to have to come out of retreat and do your funeral service for you. So don't be selfish. Please wait until the retreat's over, then you can die whenever you want. They're just teaching. You can't do that, can you? You're never ready to die. We always die when we're not ready. We haven't got everything all sort of finished off. So in other words, just understand that when it happens, you'll never be ready. It's finished, that's all. From UK and US, how best to deal with chronic long-term disease, particularly dealing with the fatigue which can affect meditation practice? Don't put forth effort. Don't try and cure the fatigue. Care for the fatigue. Love the fatigue. Garfield meditation. Meditation. Do it in bed. And you feel tired. Understand tired. Don't try and get rid of the tiredness or the fatigue. Explore it. Understand how it works. And then see what happens. A few from Sri Lanka asked for advice dealing with addiction. And a few from Spain has asked for advice dealing with obsessive compulsive disorder. That's two in one. That's cheating. I'm only supposed to have one question. Dealing with addiction. Sometimes, very briefly, sometimes addiction sometimes comes as self-destruction because one doesn't have a proper respect for oneself. One's not at peace with oneself. One is trying to escape from this thing which one is scared of, called yourself. So if a person's already addicted, it's tough. Really, really tough. It's much better avoiding that addiction to begin with. But there's sometimes that people, they get a bit of kindness and care and acceptance from others. Somebody reminds them, you know, that you're not such a bad person. In fact, you've got a beautiful heart. You don't need to be addicted. You don't need to be self-destructive. There's too much good stuff in there to destroy. And then after a while they get a good relationship, attitude, self-respect. To me that's always the first step. There's something worth preserving in this thing you call you. And then you feel at ease with yourself. Advice dealing with obsessive compulsive disorder. Number one, don't call it disorder. Celebrate your obsessive compulsiveness. Demand obsessive compulsive rights. Stop stigmatizing obsessive compulsive. When you start doing that, you start taking away the stigmatism of it. Then maybe you can explore it because you're not trying to escape from it, hide it, cure it, care for it. Because you're not obsessive compulsive. There are times when you are. At least that's what people say you are. And there are times you're not. Am I a sicko? This evening I'm sick. But it's not a disorder. It's natural. It's part of life. Just how my body is dealing with some sort of virus or whatever, I'm not sure. It's what it does to get rid of viruses or whatever. It's great. My body is doing its thing. So obsessive compulsive disorder, don't be obsessed with your obsessive compulsive disorder. Okay, any questions from the floor? And that's not just being facetious, that's a lot of wisdom in that. No, from the floor. Whee! Okay, so now we'll bow three times to the Buddha and then do the Arahant Samadhi, and we can all go back to do some meditation. Arahang Sama Sambuddho Bhagava Buddhang Bhagavantang Abhivadevi Suakato Bhagavata Dhammo Dhammang Namassami Supatipanno Bhagavata Sangho Sangang Namami